Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Life Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240 for Autumn Semester 2021.
Well, now that that awkward situation is over, and again, just to make sure you know, if you'd like to come down to my office, I'll introduce you to my brother. He's in ashes in a box in my office. He died from COVID. I'll let you see my, I've done some recordings of my little grandson, 5 years old, who's coughing. He's got long COVID now because he was with a kid, little kid in his class whose parents decided they don't believe in masks or vaxes, and so now my little boy has long COVID, so don't mess with this issue. Today, free cash flow, and we do have a quiz. I did not realize that ReggieNet shows you that a quiz is waiting for you. And so I was planning to have a surprise quiz, and apparently I can't do a surprise quiz because ReggieNet lets you know in advance. So yeah, there's a quiz today. It's a lowball quiz. It's an easy one. Here's how I'm going to do it. This is quiz 7. This one's kind of a gimme. You might read it carefully. There's one where if you don't read it, you might give the wrong answer. But this one's an easy. Boost your score up. Quiz 8 is a killer. It is one that is preparing you for the final exam. In other words, cheap points that you might miss some of the questions, but then you know exactly what some of the hardest questions on the exam will look like. So that quiz 8 will be right after the turkey break. We'll do that one last one for the semester. And again, that one will be a 10-question headbanger just to prep you up for the final exam, which is coming up in not that far in the future. So I greatly appreciate it if you would do well on this quiz now that you already know that it was going to hit. Oh, well, one way or the other. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, I'm glad you brought that. You know what? I was going to forget all about that. Thank you. The special topics, this is on ethics, and then there's one on the Federal Reserve. Now, they both have outside materials that I've got links to. The ethics one even has a PowerPoint that I made on the main topic, which is agency, the agency dilemma. Now, the Federal Reserve one, I've got all kinds of links to Federal Reserve resources, but these are ones where you have to take good notes because it pours at you. And I do want to caution one thing about the ethics topic is that it gets harsh. There is a part in that one. In both the Federal Reserve and in the ethics, the topic gets uncomfortable. And you may find that it would be worth it for you to listen to it as a podcast where I will censor out several very specific words that are used in that podcast having to do with historical events involving the period from the 1960s to the year 2000. Actually, from the 1960s to 1980. But those are all oral, so take good notes. You got your podcasts, and you'll have some PowerPoints and other resources to follow through on. So it's not textbook material. You're done with the textbook as of this chapter. And so then from there, I let it fly and give you the experience of an old-time university professor teaching straight out expository, the way it used to be done many, many years ago. Anyway, that's coming up. And also, I will be giving you a link to a lecture that I gave more than a few years ago that I have had to take down several times because of death threats, and I put it back up once the crazies disappear. And I'll give you a link to that one, too, that deals with a few subjects that are not in the curriculum. Anyway, enough of that. Okay, we had a a bare day on the street. We had the Dow was down 2/3%. The S&P was down more at 0.82, and then the NASDAQ was down 1 2/3. So it's following the classic pattern of risk and expected return, obviously the backwards of it. The Dow was down the least. It's the least risky. S&P 500 is more risky, and it was down more, and the NASDAQ was down the most because it has the riskiest securities in it. Classic pattern of a bull day, of a bear day, I'm sorry. Now, again, stock equities went down. Stock prices went down. So we say equities went down, and so that would mean that investors were selling equities, getting out of them. Okay, the next thing that we would say is that money in a stage one flight to quality would run over to bonds. Oh my, bond yields went up 13 basis points, which means that bond prices went down. So investors were getting out of stocks, stage one. They were getting out of bonds, stage two. Remember, from stocks, okay, let's try it here. From stocks to bonds, from bonds to?
Commodities.
Good, and from commodities to?
Bullets.
Very good. You'll survive the zombie apocalypse. Just don't forget double tap. Okay. So, well, let's look. What happened with gold and silver? Well, spank me Buddha. They went up. That's a classic stage two flight to quality. Investors were getting out of stocks, they were getting out of bonds, and they were moving their money into metals, commodities. Flight to quality, and does this mean that we're at the zombie apocalypse now? No. We'll have good days and we'll have bad days, but it's going to be a more turbulent time. And again, we had a bad day on Wall Street. But that's relative. It was a bad day if you were a bear, or a bull, rather. This was a good day for me. In one of my accounts that I have for my high-risk investments, I was up for the day about 100% because I was taking a bear position. As a matter of fact, I was taking a bear position that was three times a bear volatility. I'll show you something here. There are some kinds of securities and derivatives from them, which is what I use, which are bets on volatility. Now, this is a bull volatility. In other words, this is a bet that there's going to be a lot of standard deviation, volatility, and it's going to be to the upside. So, not surprisingly, the Ultra Pro TQQQ got smacked hard, down almost 4.5%. That's a hard smack. Okay, well, is there some way we can get away from that kind of nonsense? I, today, bet on the SQQQ, which is a short, in other words, a bear bet. And look at what I did. I was up almost 5%. On the stock. You said, wait a minute, fat boy, you said that you were up almost 100%. Yes, because I was betting on the derivative of this, which is a magnification from hell on volatility. Look at this one. This is the Dow. This is a Dow bear. It bets on the Dow going down, S-Dow. And of course, you made money on that. So again, what I'm trying to do here is emphasize this thing. You don't make money just if it's a bull day. You can make money on any day. Hell, you can make money during the apocalypse. I mean, if you know how to sell, if you've got some firearms to sell or something like that, I don't know. Here's one. SPXS, it's a multiplier of 3 on the volatility of the Standard & Poor's 500. So, of course, it's a bear. See, bear? And, of course, it was up. So you can make money this way. If you have a taste for trading, which a lot of people kind of do, and I try to tease that out if you've got that taste, understand that there's never a time when you should say, well, the market hates me. No, the market just hates your attitude. If you are a bear in a bull market, you'll get beaten. If you're a bull in a bear market, you'll get beaten. You have to go with the market. You don't fight the market. You wait. You work it. You play it. So I'm just showing you this just to make sure you understand that there is money to be made in a very dark time. It's just that most people don't do that. Thank God. Someone in the last class asked me, well, can you talk about Rivian? Does anyone know what happened with Rivian today? Was there anything? Rivian went public today. It did its IPO today. You know, Rivian here in town, the big electric truck maker that might even be your employer because they're hiring like unbelievable numbers of people. I mean, what blew me away was I know a young man, he graduated and he just wasn't aggressive enough getting employment, and now he's desperate. He got hired at Rivian last month at like almost $60,000 a year. Talk about pulling a rabbit out of the hat. Then I know this kid who's a high school dropout. He even washed out of the service, the Army. He got a job there at $17 an hour. Stupid little son of a... Anyway, so Rivian is an awesome company. So just to show you what happens. Rivian went public. You understand that when the company went public, no one like us bought stock at the IPO. That was bought by the investment banking syndicate. And then through the day, the morning, they pumped that son of a dog up. Pumped it up. Media. Rivian went public today. Financial News Network. Rivian went public. Cramer. Rivian went public. Boy, is this incredible. Look at that price going up. It was all a game. To drive the price up, spike it, and then dump it off to the stupid sons of bitches who believe that stuff. It dropped off like that. Here's the interesting part, though. Unlike a lot of times when this, it's called a pump and dump. Rivian actually didn't fall off the face of the earth. Do you see how it dropped and then it settled? That's actually a good sign. That's actually a good sign. I'm talking like an old school trader here right now. I mean, I would expect a pump and dump. The dump would have dropped that thing down to about 80. It didn't in this case. It dropped it down to about 100 from its peak that was around 125. So right off the bat, that gives me a little bit of the warm and fuzzies. Am I about to throw a pile of money into Rivian? I'm going to wait a little while because I still want to see a little more about their financials, and I want to talk to a few more people on the street about it. The one thing is that I did have this one trader yesterday, late afternoon. It was hilarious. He said, look, we're all a little skittish about Rivian because we don't want another Tesla. Tesla is $1 trillion overvalued. The Wall Street funds that have that stock are scared to death. They don't dare get out of it because it could literally bankrupt a few houses and really damage the financials of a bunch of other houses. So they've got to keep that stock propped up way above its intrinsic value. They don't ever want to see something like that again. So they're being a little skittish about Rivian right now, although it is positive. It seems to be a legit company. It's run by people who are responsible. See, Tesla is run by a front man. He's controversial. He's a drug addict, all that great stuff. He's a pothead. But there's a little bit of a legit company in there. Rivian seems to be more of a legit company in there. So Am I going to invest in it right now? Probably not. I'll give it a little bit of breathing room before I get too excited. I was excited about Nikola, and that thing is really disappointed. But anyway, so that's where this is. And this gives you just sort of a little bit of an idea of how we think. Again, the one thing, I wish I could protect you out there in the world, but I can't prepare you. And sometimes knowing a little bit about how stocks work, how you should think as opposed to how you're told to think, can do you a lot of good in your lives. And someday you'll make a fortune, and then you'll remember me and think, geez, I should help him get rich. Oh, he's dead. Oh, well. Lol. Now, let me explain again that I run the program for Management Development International, which is out of International Studies. We're trying to fold it into the College of Business. We bring over Ministry of Finance and Land Resources and Economics, Economic Development government officials from developing countries in West Africa, in the Caribbean, and Central and South America. We're reaching out to Asia now and up into North Africa. And I teach them basics of finance, enough so that what they can do is they can value potential private companies that the government could help, invest in, and then let go of later. So when they say, we want you to teach us advanced financial modeling, I'm teaching them what I'm teaching you right now. Now, the road is actually a little bit more difficult because even though these people are educated, very worldly, urbane, their finance education is not what we do in the Western world, not like what I teach you. And so this is kind of like news to them, how we do this. And I make it very mechanical. Now, what I do, I'm going to put this up online. I got to fix a couple of little things in it for you guys. But I'm going to put this up online in ReggieNet so that you guys have this for you to study. And then I'm going to go through the basics of it. And there are plenty more examples of everything I say in these PowerPoints. But you can just go through it at your leisure over the weekend and into next week, and you can see different companies. Now, a couple of things, cautionary words about this. Some companies are very big about letting professors use their actual numbers and their names. Here, we'll give you everything you need because we want these students of yours to know how it works. And so you'll see in here some companies that you actually recognize their names. Cisco, Kellogg, Harbor Tools, those are in here. There are also some companies in here that you wouldn't recognize their names because you would, but I have to use fictitious names because they don't want us to show their numbers. They allow us to use the numbers, but they say don't tell them our names because in some cases it might be just a little embarrassing what happened. And in other cases, it's just a matter of they just don't want to have too many people see the internal workings of management decision. This is a decision-making framework. In each of these examples, you're going to see a project, and that project had a life expectancy. I chose two that had four-year life expectancies. Now, the one with Cisco, and another company that was involved in a similar business. These projects had a four-year life because they were working in a transitional technology that was in the 2010s. In that era, there had been internets since the 1950s and 60s, but only military people, academics, and nerds and geeks like I was knew about that. In 1991, the internet came to life. It woke up. because a couple of visionaries in Congress had convinced all of these old fuddy-duddies that the country needed a much upgraded telephone system, communication system, for this coming wave, this era. Then in the 2000s, a lot of what you see now didn't look like this. There were not all that many websites. A lot of the websites were just like chat rooms. There were social media sites that were beginning to catch the interest of very bad actors, like foreign governments and our CIA were interested because they could track terrorists through them, they thought. And quite honestly, there was a lot of, dominating it were pictures of cats and pornography. But then in the 2000s, at that time, though, there was a movement afoot. Companies were saying, what can we do with this internet? Now, most people think, well, that means that they were doing e-commerce. That was, yeah, they were starting to, but it was still awfully dodgy at that time. What was going on behind the scenes was moving faster. An internet that we couldn't see, an invisible internet, an internet of things. And Cisco, just to give you a quick forewarning about what was going on, Cisco was a company that did not do B2C, business to consumer. They did B2B, but they were known widely all through the Western world because they funded public broadcasting and national public radio. Everyone who was in, middle class, upper middle class, who listened to NPR or listened to all of those public broadcasting shows, they always heard, this program is brought to you by Cisco. Now, they didn't know what Cisco did, but they knew it was a good company. They had a very positive look on it. Cisco was and is a data processing, electronics, all that kind of stuff, networking, the whole nine yards. That's what they do. It was business to business. But they said, okay, we are actually kind of like experts in this internet thing. And now that we now have all these appliances and cars and things talking to each other and talking to their parent companies, they need routers just like people with computers do, modems. Okay, then that was what Cisco did. We're going to start by creating a router so that all of these appliances that need the internet can communicate through their own router. The beginning of the Internet of Things. And Cisco said, okay, we're going to have it made in China, and so we know what we're going to sell it for. There's your revenue. We know what we're going to sell it for. Okay. So the next thing would be, okay, what would be the big cost of this? Well, we're going to buy it wholesale from China. Now, a few of you have come into my office, and you've seen, I have one example of a product that I had made in China some many years ago. And in China, what they will do is you give them your specs. They'll build it. Not only will they build it, but they'll put it in a pretty box, pack it up, and drop ship the stuff to wherever you tell them to. And I mean, this has been going on for years. I mean, my last project, which was in Taiwan with Zhongli Manufacturing, I mean, it was just like, good grief. They did everything. It was like an optical product. They even put it in a little orange pouch. You can come to my office, you can see it. And then they put it in a pretty box, and then they put all the boxes in a big package. And in the package, there was even a point of purchase display. The retailer who got my stuff would pull it out, pop, and then all of these boxes would just lay out perfectly in there. I mean, It just made it way too easy to be an entrepreneur back then. But anyway, so there was obviously they would know what it was going to cost. Then they would that would give them their gross income. And then, of course, you're selling general and administrative expenses. And then minus your depreciation. And that buys you your operating income line. And then, minus your taxes, which you just take operating income times the tax rate. By the way, operating income is sometimes called EBIT. And this gets you. Now, the old days, this was the term that was popular until a few years ago was incremental earnings. You'll see that in the PowerPoints. And I really do need to fix that because the popular term now is NOPAT, net operating profit after taxes. You've heard me use that several times in the class. NOPAT is, it's pretty much pervasive. Like I said, I'm going to have to fix that in that PowerPoint because I see that I'm still using the old term from long ago, net earnings. I'll show you here. Give me a second. I'm going to take you down here. Oh, well, let me talk through here. Okay, so that's the first thing on our road. So we got revenue. Whoops, I'm sorry. So we've got free cash flow is going to be the revenue. I keep writing revenue. I just want to write NOPAT. I already did the revenue stuff. NOPAT. Now, here, we're going to have to add back the depreciation expense. Then we're going to subtract what actually happened, the capital expenditures. And we're going to subtract the change in net operating working capital that I showed you before. And there is your Uncle Bob. That's all it takes, the incremental free cash flow. Now, you project that for the years of the project, and then you find the net present value of it. That's how you do it. The practically speaking, this is what we do for projects, whether it's a machine, a fleet of trucks, a marketing campaign, a new product release, this is how we do it. Now, just as a background, again, for what I teach for the international groups, they want to know, they would say, these little private companies, they can't get to where they need to be without more money. Okay, we're going to see what their product is, what each of these is making, and we'll project the free cash flows for a period of 7 years. In other words, government, you are going to take a project, you're considering a project. That project is this company. What we want to know is whether or not that company is positive net present value. And how much free cash flow excess will there be? So in other words, if I use a discount rate of, let's say, the government can borrow money at 10%. Okay, is it worth it to use that money to invest in this company? Discount NPV at 10%. If the answer is yes, okay, how much is there? How much extra is there going to be in this project? What's in it for us as a government? Okay, there's the net present value came out to be $260 million. Wonderful. That means at the end of that 7 years, we can dump this, we can sell the stock to the public, to Western investors if necessary, whatever. And what we will do with that money is we'll go on to another project. Or we'll use some of that money to upgrade our infrastructure, roads, bridges, sewers, and water lines. But that's exactly what we're doing in these company and analyses. That's what we do in country and for countries that are looking to help infant industries get on their feet. Capital budgeting, incremental earnings, determinant incremental free cash flow, the whole nine yards. It's not hard to do this, but the one where it all starts, and you're going to see this, go through the PowerPoint. You're going to see this whole process going on where all of the numbers arise from the revenues. We say, okay, in a lot of cases, the selling, general, and administrative expenses, historically for this company and for companies in the same industry, is 15% of revenues. That gets us, we know the depreciation line, we know the cost of goods sold, so we got the SG&A. It's usually a percent of the revenues. The real question is, and also accounts payable and accounts receivable. We usually do those as a percent of the revenues as well. It's just how we do it. Now, the revenue, there's the trick. How in the world do we project revenues? One thing we can do, let me get off this. Take this down here. Why is this hard? Why is this doing this to me? Well, let me get off that for a second. I was going to show you, I don't see the slide right now. I usually do this expository, just talk it through, and now I'm trying to use a PowerPoint with it, which I don't like to do. Here's the thing, revenues. The simple way is to say we start out at $5 million a year revenue, and we have that all 4 years of the project. That's not how it works in real life. In real life, usually you're going to have a ramp-up period. Year zero is nothing but bleeding out the butt. Salaries, no income, no revenues. You're buying your equipment. You're paying for this, that, and the other thing. And so that first year is going to be awful as far as the blood that's going to flow. Capital expenditures and the whole nine yards. Last week, I had a former student who has a very desirable entrepreneurial edge to her come in, and she started talking about the business she's going to start. She wants to start. And she showed me some numbers. They'll have to be fixed up. But there was the cost of the product wholesale, the costs, then the revenues, the cost wholesale, then build the inventory, then after the inventory is built, then sell the product, and it'll sell like hotcakes. And the first thing that I asked her, I said, where's your salary? And where's the other two who are working in this? Where are your salaries? Well, we're just not going to take any salaries. We'll just live. No, you're going to take salaries. If you can't recognize that, you didn't hear anything in the class when you were in it. Your opportunity cost. You're taking a salary whether you want to or not. You're either eating it and being a victim, or you are going to pay yourselves so that you stay interested in this. Because I guarantee you, about 6 months into it, when you don't have any of those revenues yet, and even when you do start getting revenues, they're not going to be your projections, you're going to say, FTS, I don't want to do this anymore. This isn't fun at all. Because I can't eat. I've been kicked out of my apartment. The hell with it. So in other words, get honest up front. There's going to be these expenses right out of the gate before there is ever a dollar of revenue. Now, as far as expenses go, there's two kinds. There are the operating expenses that you can subtract right there in year zero, and then there's the capital expenditures that you have to capitalize and then depreciate out. Now, for simplicity in these, I did straight line. $1.2 million over 5 years, that's $204,000 a year, straight line. If you want to be more realistic about it, I mean, really, Excel, all you have to do is say equals and say, well, I want to do modified accelerated cost recovery, and then open the parentheses. Here's the value minus salvage, minus and all that, and then comma, here's the number of years. And then you just take that through, and you've got your lines for your depreciation if you don't want to do it straight line. It's not hard to do. I just do it straight line here for simplicities, for the sake of simplicity. Now, let me, what was I going to say? Oh, about revenues, too. Typically, your revenues are going to suck. Then they're going to start to rise. How long that takes? Well, that's partly on you. How hard do you want to market? The problem is that if you market too hard, you're probably going to blow it. If you market too soft, you're going to blow it too. And if you market to the wrong places, you might blow it. So you have these people who say, well, I think I'm going to market on Facebook. There you go. Do you know what the average person who uses Facebook is? Not a person who's going to spend money on your product. Well, I'm going to do this on TikTok. Yes, you're going to do it on a network that has 12 to 20-year-olds and a few burned-out people older than that. Yeah, that's going to be a great market. You see, you got to think through where it's going to be, how long it's going to be before people start to notice your name, notice your product, notice things. And that's long before you get brand loyalty. But anyway, so it's a long haul. Revenue, I will tell you this, though. There is plenty of software out there, add-ons for Excel and other things, other places, where you can say, okay, here are my revenues, and you can do what-if scenarios. What if growth of revenues is like growth phase, then cash cow, then decline, growth phase is 6%, growth phase is 4%. There's plenty of places out there that'll do that, and even Excel, you can do what-if analysis in there. So that's not much of an issue. What is an issue is depreciation expense. The products that I'm showing you here, two of them, one of them was a router for appliances, and then one was a full-blown Internet of Things router. But in both of those cases, the projects lasted 4 years, but the depreciable life of the projects was 5 years, according to generally accepted accounting principles consistently applied. So in other words, a year after the project was over, you had this zombie depreciation tail 1 year long, just sitting there. Well, that's okay. I mean, that's just pure tax shield. And no cost, no revenues, no profits. It's just a tax shield. But you do have to recognize that there can be a tail. Story about this. Many years ago, back in the 1990s, there was a program that several individuals and I were doing work in. It was low-income housing for the elderly. Now, the way it worked was you raise capital, say $10 million. The U.S. government and several states would match that money if it were to be used to make housing, nice rental apartments for old people that would have subsidized rent. So, in other words, you would have an apartment complex, nice painted walls, clean, beautiful sinks and kitchen, that, and carpets, all the amenities, air conditioning, heat, central heat, and then maybe a center, a community center in the middle where everyone could come down at night and spend time together. You'd have entertainment in their form. It was a great idea. And so what we would do is we would create a partnership. Okay, then we would sell limited partnership units, $50,000 or $100,000 units. And these investors, rich people, lawyers, doctors, architects, dentists, surgeons, you name it, just rich CEOs, they would buy the units. And so we would bring together $10 million, and then we government would kick in $10 million in grants or zero-interest loans or whatever, and then we would run the program. Now, depreciable life, well, anyway, we would lose money out the butt. I mean, we paid ourselves great salaries to do this, and, you know, it was just phenomenal what we were doing. Great salaries, and the people had a nice place to live, and we were losing money hand over fist because it was subsidized housing. The people were paying ridiculously low rent, and the government wasn't covering us. They were just covering a part of the difference between market and subsidized rent. So we were getting killed. And, of course, the investors, and we weren't personally, we were paying ourselves great salaries. But the investors, oh, they just loved what we were doing. Oh, it was just, oh, God, it was like every year was candy year. You know, wait, what? Yeah, because we were losing money, paying ourselves ridiculous salaries and things like that. And so they were getting a tax loss against their real income as professionals. You lost this much money in this investment this year. And then we were also, these places were cracker boxes. They were depreciating over 20 years, $10 million a year over 20 years, accelerated cost, double declining balance at the time. They were losing, they were getting another form at the end of every year. Not only did you lose money on the project, but you lost all this money on the depreciation of the real asset. And all of that was protecting their real income as professionals from taxation. They didn't really lose that money. A $50,000 investment, after 4 years, they already had saved $75,000 in taxes. Over 10 years, the life of the project, probably close to $110,000. They loved it. Now, I walked off on that tangent. What's going on, though, is you see the housing was gone in 10 years. We tore it down. We would tear it down, put the people into another nice place we set up until the project was killed by the Bush administration, whatever. But anyway, but you see, there were 10 years was actual operation. And then there was this 10 years, there was no revenue, no cost. There was just this line of, for 10 years, 11 through 20, of minus depreciation. So there was this long tail just hanging off there. And we would just kill it off we had to pay an extra tax to kill it off. But anyway, okay. So you'll have a tail. Let me take you down here. Now, the capital budget, that's how much you're going to spend. Capital budgeting is figuring out whether you're going to spend it or not. The whole free cash flow thing there. You're driving down your first real evidence that you ain't in the world of accounting anymore is your incremental earnings. And again, I caution, that means NOPAT. Put that in your notes. Incremental earnings is NOPAT. And I apologize, I've just never fixed that all these years since the terminology changed. Mother's work is never done. Now, one point I want to make here. I've seen this over and over again through my career. These really are the three phases. However, you might see these phases divided up into sub-phases. Like the initial outlay phase, there might be a phase where it's nothing but talk and drawing up blueprints. And then the second part of the initial outlay phase would be actually going out and getting all the materials to start the project up and building up the inventories. Now, the ongoing cash flows, that's just riding the pony. Growing the revenues, marketing the hell out of it, working day in and day out, and if you're the right kind of person, loving every minute of it because this is how you make your living and this is how you make your mark on life. And then winding it down, Don't be stupid. Plan completely the shutdown at the front end. Don't think, well, we'll just figure out, put those trucks in a field, or we'll just put some tape over that building. No, you got asbestos in that building. Those trucks can be sold. You got a toxic waste pit out there. What do you mean? That's just a bunch of computer equipment. That's toxic environmental hazard. Get it all figured out up front, and then at the end of the project, it's not suffering. It's just getting the project tied up. That's enough for today. You got a quiz to crank up.